Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking at how to deal with lump sums. Whether you've sold a business or received a pension or an inheritance, receiving a lump sum can be a turning point in your life. So how does the sage investor best ensure that their cash gets to work as efficiently as possible? Our panel highlights some common pitfalls to avoid and explains how using the 3L approach, that's liquidity, longevity and legacy, can help to deliver your financial and general goals. We start with one of the authors of a new UBS Wealth Management report offering investment strategy insights, in this case into this key question of how investors should best deal with lump sums. UBS Wealth Management CIO cross-asset strategist Christopher Swan is one of those co-authors, and he joins us now. Chris, I'd like to start asking you about how often this question crops up. One imagines that this theme of cash windfalls is a pretty regular narrative when you're talking to clients.
A lot of people, when they sell their businesses, when they retire and decide to take a lump sum, some people whose parents or relatives are very wealthy and concerned about efficient estate planning can all of a sudden find themselves in the happy position of having very, very substantial deposits land on their bank account. And I guess the key question that they then face is, how do they deal with this? If you let money sit on your account for prolonged periods of time, obviously it declines in purchasing power. So, for example, since 2009, for a US deposit account, the purchasing power of cash would have declined about 15%, and that's actually greater than during the inflationary period in the 1970s, partly because of the very low real interest rates after inflation. Sometimes cash payments into people's accounts are extremely lumpy, particularly for an entrepreneur selling a business, that it's almost like getting 30 years' pay in 1 month sometimes, because if their company IPOs, if their company is bought by a larger rival, all of a sudden they crystallize years and years and years of hard work and dedication and imagination. And obviously the last thing they want when that happens is to put it into the market and see the value evaporate at a rapid pace. And so part of the goal of the report is to help individuals who do get very large lump sums, whether from a business or from relatives or from a pension fund, to help them navigate that process and feel psychologically comfortable with going into markets that obviously do involve risk.
Chris, let's talk about the so-called 3Ls next. In a piece, you and your colleagues set out how the 3L approach can be a good starting point for handling a lump sum. We've discussed the approach before in this program, but maybe you can refresh our memories about why exactly liquidity, longevity and legacy matter, and I guess why they're particularly relevant here.
Liquidity is important because this is focused on ensuring that you have your financial needs met for the coming, say, 2 to 5 years. The reason that's important is that if you have to sort of raid your long-term assets, which you're expecting to have very long-term returns, you might end up selling them at the wrong moment. So it's really important to ensure that if you're, say, planning on buying a house, you need to finance a child's education, you have healthcare needs, any of those things, it's important to make sure that your liquidity needs are met and are available in assets that are not going to fluctuate wildly in value. With a longevity bucket, these are the assets that are designed to provide for you and your family for the duration of your life. And because, again, they're not short-term and you don't need to access them very quickly, you can invest in riskier assets which have higher levels of volatility, but over the long term that volatility smooths out and you get a larger return. With a legacy asset, these are the kind of assets that are intended for your heirs or for charitable foundations, for those wealthy enough to be thinking in those kind of time frames. And here again, even more so with your longevity bucket, you can take advantage of what in finance you could call an illiquidity premium, where assets that you're willing to lock up for longer, such as private equity funds, where you might not have access to your funds for a decade or around that kind of time scale, you can expect a higher return from that.
Chris Swan, let's talk about behavioural biases, pitfalls to avoid. The report looks at this. Now, some of these are understandable, but nevertheless, things like time in the market, the problems there, the familiarity question. Tell us more about the character of these sorts of challenges.
The temptation to time the market is acute in all investors, but it's particularly intense when markets are nearing a peak. For example, at the moment, after the very volatile and downward moving markets that we had in December, global equities, at least at the time we're talking, are around about 5% away from their all-time peak. So what often happens when you have investors who have a very large deposit, the cost of mistiming the market can seem particularly painful. So obviously an investor that invested in 2007 and had dived straight into the equity market would have seen a good deal of their net worth disappear fairly suddenly and would have had to wait quite a long time to recuperate. So on average, since the Second World War, if you'd had only US equities, the average recovery rate from a trough would be about 26 months. And obviously that's a very long time to wait if you've just plunged most of your money. So that partly explains why many investors, particularly with lump sums, can often be rather cautious. But this can lead to a good deal of procrastination. So the temptation can be to sit on the sidelines in cash for a very long period of time. I think where the behavioural bias comes in, what investors often neglect is that obviously markets over the longer term tend to be upward trending. Also, markets often trade very close to their peaks for a lot of the time. So, for example, the S&P 500 trades within 5% of a record high 60% of the time. And there's a tendency for investors to get unduly anxious when it does so.
So how best to address those worries, Chris Swan, and to look at phasing in from a capital position to an optimum and an optimised portfolio? What are the best strategies? There's an advantage, one assumes, to getting your money to work as quickly as possible. But there are a number of factors to bear in mind, options to consider, aren't there, Chris?
From a financial theory point of view, putting your money to work straight away has certain advantages. Since markets tend to trend higher, if you're out of the market for a prolonged period in risk-free assets, you can miss out on quite a lot of upside. That said, if you're investing in, a fixed income portfolio, largely of government bonds or lower risk financial assets, obviously you can afford to move into markets faster. In terms of equity markets, there's a certain psychological benefit to phasing in, and it does somewhat reduce the risk that you're putting in 100% of your capital in one go. This is a process known as dollar cost averaging. And because of the temptation to procrastinate, because of course, sort of once the money lands, you come up with a strategy with your financial advisor and it calls for a certain allocation to risky assets. And then you start to fret, oh, well, is it the time to do it? Of course, you know, the trade dispute is continuing to rumble on. Will the Federal Reserve move back to a more aggressive monetary tightening stance? There's lots of things that could go wrong and you start to procrastinate. So what we recommend is that you set an established schedule, putting tranches of capital into the equity market. And if you see a dip in the market, that's a good opportunity to accelerate this phase-in.
Christopher Swan. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look in more detail at a couple of specific strategies to deliver an optimised portfolio from an all-cash position. Now, earlier, Chris Swan was talking about some of the nervousness that an investor might experience. Say they're wary the market's facing headwinds. One option is to implement a put-writing strategy. Well, what is that exactly and how does it work? Well, let's ask Tse Shao, derivative strategist in the UBS CIO, and Tse authored the section of the piece that looked at exactly this. Tse, what exactly is put selling?
Basically, a put is a contract where the seller of the put gives the buyer of the put the right, but not the obligation, to sell a certain amount of underlying, for example, stock, at a pre-described price at a pre-described time. So concretely, for example, a IBM put with a one-year expiry and a strike at, say, 100% of current spot would be a contract where the buyer of the put receives the right to sell IBM 1 year from now at today's price. And obviously, if the price of IBM would go up, then the buyer of the put would not exercise his rights because he could sell at a higher market price in the future. And conversely, if for whatever reason, 1 year from now, IBM crashes, then the owner of the put can still sell at today's high price. And that's the way a put option works.
So how does that option work in this case of a cash event, say?
The idea to use put options to build up a equity exposure is as follows. Instead of just outright going into the market and buying the underlying security, an investor could also just sell a put and wait and see what happens. So if the seller of the put would sell the put option at a strike of, say, 90% of spot, then he would wait until expiry. And if the market went up, then he still receives his premium and he made like a couple of percentage just for waiting and doing nothing. And in case the underlying would go down, then the person that bought the put from him would exercise his right to sell, and a seller of the put would be then assigned a number of stocks. So basically, I guess the advantages are, first, you receive a premium for waiting, and secondly, if you do get assigned the stock, you basically purchase the stock at a discount versus today's spot. So the advantages are twofold. And finally, if you look into the statistics a bit, it turns out that if you look at risk-adjusted returns, selling puts has a higher risk-adjusted returns than owning the stock outright. And finally, if you were to sell puts before a market crash would happen, then the put selling strategy actually beats the long-only strategy, both in terms of risk-adjusted returns as well as in absolute returns, because first of all, you receive the premium, which is acting like a little bit of a cushion. So when the market goes down, you suffer less. And during the crash, you will almost surely get assigned, and you benefit equally on the way up as the long-only variation.
And in another scenario, if the cash windfall recipient's on the sidelines, potentially missing out on market moves, there are other options to address opportunity cost, including so-called call options. Say, Xiao, again, call options. Tell us more about this.
If you purchase a call option, then you pay the seller a premium to receive the right, but not the obligation to buy a certain amount of stock at a pre-described price and time. To take IBM again as an example, if 1 year from now IBM goes through the roof, goes to the moon, and you're long a call option, then you have the right to buy it at a pre-described price, which is most certainly lower than the price 1 year from now. And as the owner of the call option, you made a profit. But conversely, if IBM would significantly drop in the market price, then you're not obligated to exercise. You can just walk away, and the only thing you paid was the upfront premium. That's the mechanism of a call option.
Okay, Seychelles, so that's the mechanism. How then is a call option relevant if we look at that investor once again who's subject to a significant cash event?
I could imagine that if you are sitting on a pile of money and you're a bit hesitant to actually enter the market because you fear that markets might go down, or you have other considerations to stay on the sidelines for a bit, you always run the risk that markets run away. I think in our publication, my colleague Justin, he computed the statistics, and in the vast majority of times, markets actually do just run away and waiting doesn't work. So to limit your risk of being exposed to this situation where you just wait and wait and wait and the market runs away, you could spend a bit of premium and buy a call option. And particularly call options that are further out of the money, they are relatively cheap due to the skew, and you therefore can still participate on the upside while you wait. Of course, you do pay a premium for that.
Say, Xiao, let's wrap all this up by returning to you, Christopher Swan. Chris, there are case studies towards the end of the piece, and I just wondered, what role do they play? Is it an important strategic element for you and your colleagues to model these possibilities, to develop case studies, and then present the analysis to clients?
Well, I think it's important to reach out to the clients to understand some of their preoccupations. There's a considerable difference, for example, between a 50-year-old entrepreneur who's selling their business and maybe has got $15 million or pounds for that, to a retiree who's maybe somewhat older, getting a smaller lump sum for a pension. And equally for, say, a 35-year-old, I think was another example we used of a professional who's getting a $5 million gift from their parents. I think all of these scenarios call for very different kinds of approach, and of course you're going to have different kinds of risk appetite depending on the profile of the client. And obviously it's very important to really tailor the approach and look at the unique needs of the customer.
And that's Christopher Swan bringing us to the end of this 228th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. If you want to find out more, especially for more on put selling as a strategy in the face of expected volatility, have a look for a more in-depth piece on that theme from Chris and Say via UBS.com. In the meantime, you can listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.